data is the key to properly locate charging infrastructure.
The charging is also driving people to buy an electric car.
Looking a bit deeper into those data can make better decisions.
Hello and welcome back to the Electromobility Podcast. Let's start with a question for the audience. What do you think comes first, the electric vehicle or the charger? Today, we will look at where we can recharge our electric vehicles. Of course, some can do it at home, but not everyone can. Electric vehicle owners, or EV owners, who live in apartment buildings and park on the street, rely heavily on public chargers. According to a study by consultancy firm McKinsey, in 2021, 42% of European EV owners in cities had no access to a home charging point. As an EV driver or a potential EV driver, making sure that you will be able to recharge your vehicle is essential, but chargers don't grow like trees. So how are they installed in our streets? How do public authorities decide where to put their charging points? And who is involved in this process? Today, we will explore the various factors that city planners and stakeholders consider when deciding where to place charging stations, from social demographic criteria to energy grid capacity. Join us through this journey.
Hello, and welcome once more. My name is Katarzyna Kirowa, and I will be your host during today's episode of the Electromobility Podcast. Now, this episode will be a little different from what you are used to with our podcast, because this time we will be discussing all the various aspects of planning charging infrastructure in cities with three esteemed guests that are here with me today. So let me introduce them. First, I would like to welcome Eva Sunnerstedt, Manager for Clean Vehicles and Fuels Program at City of Stockholm. Welcome, Eva.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Our second guest, who is with me in our Brussels studio, is Simon Weeks from the Electromobility Research Center of Vrije Universiteit Brussels, which focuses, among other things, on both technical and socio-economical aspects of electric vehicles and charging infrastructure. Thank you for coming, Simon.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
And last but not least, I would like to welcome a researcher from International Council on Clean Transportation, Marie Rajon-Bernand, with whom we will discuss what is the situation with efficient planning of charging infrastructure in different European cities and what lessons can we learn from them. Welcome, Marie.
Thank you. Nice to be here as well.
So let's cut right through it, because planning of charging infrastructure can resemble a fortune-telling exercise at times, while we need to cater to the needs of current EV drivers, but also anticipate the demand in years to come. There's a lot of factors at play, and it can be hard for urban planners to take them all into account. So Maddie, as a researcher at ICCT, you surely saw many possible approaches cities can take in this matter. What do you see as the most crucial factors they have to take into account?
So there are indeed many factors that city planners should consider to determine the optimal location for EV charging stations within a city. And I would like to cite four factors, and the importance of each of those factors mostly depend on the charger type and the cities at stake. So the first one is EV adoption and traveling patterns, meaning how many EVs will be on the road, when will they arrive on the road, where EV owners will live, and ideally also where they will work to inform about their traveling patterns to ideally locate charging stations. The second key factor is private charging availability. Indeed, the more EV owners have access to private charging, the less public charging infrastructure will be needed. And private charging can sometimes be hard to assess. So a proxy that is often used is the housing type and tenor of EV owners. Because if you're an EV owner and you live in a detached house you own, then you're more likely to have access to private charging than if you live in a rented apartment. The third key factor is grid power available. Indeed, the costs of deploying a charger and the time it takes to do so will depend on the availability of power at the location. And to finish, the fourth factor that I would like to mention is, generally speaking, urban planning objectives to ensure there is no competition with cycling lanes, public transportation plans, etc. So, for example, if a city has the goal of making a certain street pedestrian and cyclists only in, let's say, 3 years, then it might not be the best idea to install an overnight public overnight charger in that street. So overall, four key factors: EV adoption, private charging availability, grid power available, and urban planning objectives.
Great. In your research for ICCT, you identified three approaches to planning. So can you tell me a little bit more about these approaches, and also how future-proofed are they? How easy it is for the planners to assess them in time and to perhaps figure out whether their predictions were correct or not?
Sure. So maybe I can start with saying that there is no one methodology fits all. It all depends on the local context, the EV market maturity, and the city's objectives. So those three approaches are the demand-driven approach, the planning-oriented approach, and the business-oriented one. In early stages, the demand-driven and the planning-oriented approach make the most sense. But what are those different strategies? So let's start with the demand-driven one. It is more of a bottom-up approach, meaning that current EV owners or future EV drivers can request a charger to be located close to where they live if they do not have access to private home charging. So that's why it's more bottom-up. The planning-oriented approach, on the other hand, is more of a top-down approach because the government does the exercise of planning for potentially citywide charging infrastructure needs, being in discussion with, for example, the electricity utilities or all the different city agencies. And so they locate ideal sites for charging infrastructure, and then charge point operators can come in and apply to deploy chargers at those locations. There is no one approach that is better than the other. I think that a mix is interesting. So for example, a city can deploy a demand-driven program throughout the city and then use planning-oriented approaches at points of interest or also at places with low EV adoption to ensure equitable access throughout the city. About the last approach, the business-oriented one, well, as its names suggest, this is the deployment under this strategy. The deployment of charging infrastructure is mostly left to the market, and the city is just here to ease the process, and this can happen when the EV market is mature. So in short, three approaches: demand-driven, planning-oriented, and business-oriented, suited for different contexts. And maybe one word about how future-proofed these methodologies are. The demand-driven approach ensures a minimum utilization in early phases of EV adoption, since an EV driver requested the charger. So at least you won't have underutilized assets. The planning-oriented can be future-proof in the sense that the city has an idea of long-term goals. So as I already mentioned, if a street is going to become pedestrian only, then it might not be the best idea to install a charger there. And last, about business-oriented, well, usually if the private sector deploys a charger, it's that there is a business case, so they foresee a minimum utilization rate, and so we avoid stranded assets.
So if I understand it correctly, these approaches have a different way of being applied, and also the cities don't have to choose only one approach. They can use different approaches in different stages of the readiness of their EV market and of their also infrastructure on site.
Yes,
correctly?
This is very correct. I would say that it depends on the maturity of the EV market, but also on the charging type. For example, demand driven might be best suited for public overnight slow or normal or AC alternating current charger, while planning-oriented might be better suited for DC fast chargers, for example.
We will stay with the methods and approaches for a bit longer, because all this, to be efficient and to understand correctly where we are, what is the current state of the situation in the city, for all this, the cities will need data to assess their state of the art at the moment. Simon, What data-driven approaches can cities employ to determine the most effective locations for their charging points?
Well, I think here there are different approaches, and the optimal approach will of course depend, as Marie also said, on the maturity of the EV market in the city. So how many EV drivers does the city already have, and what charging infrastructure is already available? Now, I think in general, and based on our experience, we can sort of differentiate three data-driven approaches that we typically see being used when making a planning for where to install public charging infrastructure. So first, there is a strategic approach where you would use socio-demographic data on different regions in the city to predict where initial EV adopters would live. And so this can be factors such as income, age, vehicle ownership, education, which is typically available for many cities and which can serve as a first input to make an estimate where the EV drivers will live. Ideally, you combine this also with detailed geographic data on example, the type of housing to get an estimate which EV users can also charge privately and which not. And then you can install a first limited number of charging stations there where the predicted demand is high. That's a first approach. A second approach is to go more for a coverage-based approach, as we call it. And there you would try to determine the locations of new charging stations in such a way to create as much geographical coverage as possible. So you sort of spread out the locations of charging stations over the city to ensure that there is a basic accessibility for all residents. And then finally, a third approach would be a usage-based approach. I think this is more suitable for cities with a bit of a higher maturity and which also already have an initial network of chargers installed. And there you can actually look at the historical usage of the existing charging stations in the city to determine which locations need additional infrastructure. So this is, I think, the most data-driven approach, but you also need some an initial charging network to be able to measure the data, and then you can use more advanced, more quantitative models to determine the optimal locations of new infrastructure.
So out of these three approaches, they can also have a certain impact on the way the EV market in the city is developing, right? So yes. If you have the second approach you mentioned, the coverage-based one, it can also sort of prop people to try driving electric vehicles because the coverage will be there, right?
I think that's definitely true, because if you look at the strategic approach, you mainly place charging stations where you expect the first EV adopters to live, but there are also other regions where you want to maybe also install charging stations to motivate also those people. And that's something that's being done in this coverage-based approach. So that's also one of the advantages of them, that you also sort of see that there is an equitable distribution within the regions of the city and that everybody has at least a basic accessibility to charging stations.
If we move to a little bit of more practical domain from these theories and approaches, can you tell us a little bit about your experience with working with the Brussels government on the electric charging infrastructure strategy? Did they use one of these approaches or did they combine them all? Did you work with different actors?
So just to give a bit of the context, so we as the Mobi Electromobility Research Centers, we have been involved for several years as an advisor to determine the on-street locations of public charging stations in Brussels. And so over the years, we've actually developed several models that follow the approaches that I just discussed. So 2 years ago in 2021, we calculated sort of the strategic locations of 250 new charging stations that was actually based on an initial study that used socio-demographic data to identify those first EV adopters. Then the next year, so that was in 2022, we adopted this more coverage-based approach, and there we developed a mathematical model that calculates the locations of new charging stations such that every Brussels citizen could find one within 150 meters from its residence, so from its home, which is a very nice conclusion also for policymakers to communicate to the public. And then now this year, in the third phase, we actually adopted a more advanced model because we already had data about the usage of those first charging stations that were already installed. And we sort of measured them all in terms of different KPIs. How much connection time do they have? How much energy is there consumed? How many people do use them? And we sort of used those KPI to identify regions where we think more infrastructure is required to then allocate new charging stations. Interestingly, here we also adopted for a more hub-oriented approach, which we seem to see that cities are also in favor in, where we actually choose several locations where multiple charging stations are installed at the same station together. And so to determine this location, we also co-determined them with Cibelga. This is Brussels' grid operator, to ensure that the grid is able to accommodate those hub locations. And maybe if I can also go a bit into about the organization, about how we did this.
Definitely.
So in terms of the process, we really communicated our result or organized the work in an open stakeholder approach. So what this means is when we develop a model, we iteratively, typically weekly or 2 weekly, discuss our model results with, on the one hand, Brussels grid operator, Cibelga, and then on the other hand, Brussels government institutions, in this case, Brussels Environment. And so each time we get input from them and we can improve the model, we can communicate it to them, make sure it adheres to all requirements. And then once we agree on a finalized model, Cibelga, the grid operator, then consult it individually with each of the 19 municipalities in Brussels to agree on the exact final location. And so in this way, those local municipalities could still make small deviation to the plan based on their specific interests. For instance, if a specific site was actually a site with high cultural value and the city wanted it to be placed on the other side of the street, those kind of modifications can still be made. So to wrap up, the approach ensured that we sort of had an optimized model for the whole region, while the local municipalities were still able to make small deviations more from bottom up. So that was a really nice approach.
So once the strategy is done, is the city just done with it and just goes with it and hopes that it's going to work out the same way they expect it? Or is there space for revision of these plans? Is there space to check up whether our expectations were correct? And how can the cities do it? And what is the timeline which you would say is optimal for this?
Interesting questions. Yeah, I would like to begin with the timeline. What would be an optimal timeline to sort of revise the deployment plan? I think based on our experience, we find out so far that's typically on a yearly frequency, because on the one hand, it's long enough to ensure that there is sufficient time to align with all those different stakeholders, all the level of policymakers from local authorities to the grid operator and everyone in between. On the other hand, doing a yearly adaptation of your rollout plan also ensures that you have the time to make changes, because the EV market is growing very fast. So it's difficult to determine beforehand how many EV drivers will be there the next year. So you should change and adapt your plan to that. But there are also other trends. For instance, the batteries in electric vehicle become larger, and we also see a transition from plug-in hybrid electric vehicles to actually full battery electric vehicles. And they all have small consequences on how much charging infrastructure is needed. So that's why I think a yearly sort of revision is very much in place. And that's also how the Brussels government does it currently. Then also maybe a bit, how can cities ensure that, their charging infrastructure supply is always in line with the demand for charging infrastructure? I think there it is really key, and especially when this initial network of chargers is installed, that there is a continuously monitoring of the charging transaction, because that's actually very rich and useful data that you can use to make decisions on. For instance, our research group, we developed state-of-the-art methods that actually use this charging transaction data as an input to analyze whether the current supply of charging infrastructure is sufficient to meet all demand. And in a recent collaboration with it, with the University of California in Davis, we developed a model where we can determine, for instance, okay, if the EV population doubles next year, how many additional charging stations are required to accommodate this growth, but also where should they be installed? And this while considering that there is an existing network that at some places is very crowded, overly crowded, but at other places has still capacity available. So by looking a bit deeper into those data and really doing pattern recognition, you can make better decisions and keep improving the charging network. So I think that's a very important aspect.
And these models you're talking about, I suppose they are also pretty replicable, no? Is it possible for other cities to maybe follow Brussels example and go on? Do you have maybe examples of when that happened?
Well, definitely they're applicable, because what they require is a network of charging stations and then just charging transactions, which are basically the same for all cities. There is a start time, an end time, and a consumed volume. And so that's the information we use now. We created this model for Brussels, but we're currently also adapting it to, for instance, San Francisco, where we see some different results, but we can see that the model is still applicable and that still we can see the same relations. So that's very cool to see, and I think definitely it's replicable. And in the future, if there's even more charging infrastructure and more data, the models will only become more accurate.
from Brussels, let's move to due north to Stockholm for even more practical experience from developing electromobility plans. Just a little reminder that we have Eva Sunderstedt with us from the city of Stockholm. Eva, in Stockholm, you implemented an electric vehicle charging master plan within the Civitas Eccentric project in 2018. Well, now we have the year 2023. How well did your predictions go?
Well, we are working constantly with this since the EV market is going fast, and I think it's going faster than we actually expected it to go. And also, there is in our master plan, it's the on-street public charging. But then alongside with that, we also work with off-street charging, and we also have information campaigns towards multifamily housing estates and so on in order for them to get the right information to also put up non-public home charging, so to say. So the master plan includes on-street charging, but there's also other types of charging that the city has to work with and that we work with alongside with that. And they, like Marie said, I mean, they interact, of course. It depends on how much off-street charging or non-public charging or home charging you have. That depends on how much other charging, public charging you need. So, and also public charging is also growing in Stockholm, for instance, at other private land. We can see that the fueling stations or petrol stations are putting up charging that's public, and fast food restaurants and shopping centers and so on. So also public charging is also growing on other places. So we are many actors in this, I would say, which is good.
So with that many actors coming together, what is the role of the municipality in all this? What does the city of Stockholm have firmly in their hands?
Well, we try to see ourselves, I think, as like somebody who is trying to, well, facilitate like exchange between the different actors in this field. And it is a cooperation that I think is needed. And also along with the grid owner, for instance, and things like that. So that's very good to, we need to do that cooperation, I think.
So if you would look at the development of this master plan from the bird's eye view, can you sort of walk us through a step by step? Where did you have to start?
We actually got a task from the politicians in Stockholm that they wanted us to make sure that we had on-street charging, because it's like, what's going to come first? Is it the electric vehicles or is it the charging? And it was very much said that you also need the charging so that you actually can buy an electric vehicle. So you need to show that the city is working a lot with charging. So we looked at how we could solve that and see what we could do. And we came up with a business model that's we have mapped the city to see where we find good locations for charging traffic-wise, where it works, where there's not going to be a bus lane or a bicycle lane, and where it's work when it comes to sweeping the streets and snow plowing and so on. So we mapped for locations, and we also wanted to, we call them charging streets, that we have several charging points side by side at one location, because we think it's good that you have them grouped together. So when you dig for many and put many in. And when it's also easy for the EV driver, because if there's one location, there's many at that spot, not have one here and one there, like to group them. And after that, we sign access right agreements now with private operators that want to put up charging on the city's streets at their own expense. So actually, the different actors take all the costs and put up the chargers after applying for these spots. So you can like go online, we have the map, and then you say, I want to put a charging street here and there, and then we sign the agreement, and then they can start putting it up. And the city, we are in charge of the signage, the street signs. We're in charge of the sweeping and plowing of the streets, and we're also in charge of the parking control. but all the other expenses then are taken by the operator. And so far we have 8 operators or something like that, and we have 1,000 charging points on street, and it will actually grow because they're digging very much at the moment. So we will have by the end of the year maybe 1,600, somewhere around there. So we've seen a large increase during the last 2 years of charging stations coming up.
So if I should look at it from the point of view of the methodologies, how would you, let's say, characterize the approach Stockholm has taken in this?
Yeah, when I listen to Maria, I think it's very business oriented, since, but it's also planning oriented, because we have put up the different locations where it's from a traffic point of view, we think it works good. And then it's up to them to decide which one they actually want to put it and when and so on. And it's also to some extent planning oriented, if you say, because there the capacity of the grid is different in different parts of Stockholm. So in one location, for how much capacity is available, it might be more fast chargers, or if the capacity is not so much available on one street, maybe it will be more normal chargers. So that's also taken into account. So to some extent, it's a little bit of everything.
Yeah, that's something I wanted to actually ask, is whether you had different strategies for these slow and fast chargers. So you said it was basically dependent on the grid capacity, which was in a different streets available.
Yeah, I think we have there. I mean, the fast chargers takes up more room on the streets, so it's not feasible on all the locations to put up a fast charger because of the space it takes, and we need to be able to sweep the streets and so on. So some of the locations that we mapped, you cannot put fast charging on. There is a limitation there set aside from the city. But on other locations, it's up to the operator to decide whatever they think is feasible there.
If I come back to the way you were mapping the future locations and also predicting how many chargers will you need in which locations, did you use any fancy mathematical models, as Simon was explaining?
Yeah, well, we wanted to also have charging available in lots of different places. But like we heard, of course, there has to do with the income and who is buying new cars, because at that time it was only new cars. Now they are also cars on the secondhand market. So, of course, we are aware of that. But we also think that it's very good that the charging is also driving people to buy an electric car if they can see that charging is available. So it's also interesting for us that it's a little bit everywhere, so to speak. We actually looked at locations that are good for traffic situations. So we we think that when you park your car facing the sidewalk, like a 90 degrees angle towards, it's actually a better location for charging rather than you park alongside of a street. But we have charging also alongside of the street, but we try to highlight the ones that we think are better. And we also need to have the right amount of space between the building and the pole so that we can sweep the streets and plow the snow and so on. And we also avoid areas where we are doing pedestrian streets or bicycle lanes or bus lanes that we already have planned to do and so on. And we also avoid other harbor areas where we want to do more like walking and restaurants and so on. So we try, and we also avoid the very busy streets, because the very busy streets is where we want to do bicycle lanes and so on. So these are in the downtown center area and in everywhere in Stockholm, but they're not on the most heavy traffic road, but they're very close to there. So that's we had like a set of 8 to 10 criteria that we used and that we used when mapping to find these locations.
Marie, if you would want to compare what Eva just explained to us and maybe compare it with other examples you saw in ICCT, do you have any examples of cities that went completely a different way than Stockholm did?
Sure. So I think it was very interesting, as Eva mentioned. It's mostly a planning-oriented approach that was undertaken in Stockholm, because the city uploaded this map, the city did the exercise of looking at where chargers could be installed, and then the business could come in and apply for those locations. So as I mentioned, you have the planning-oriented on one hand, and then the other main approach in early stages is the demand-driven one. And I think that an example city for the demand-driven approach is Amsterdam. Well, to take a step back first, in 2009, Amsterdam adopted, I think, what Simon mentioned as the coverage approach, coverage-based approach, because Amsterdam developed a basic network all across the city and then applied this demand-driven approach where it was bottom-up, EV owners or future EV owners could request a charger to be located close to their place, and then their application was reviewed and processed by the city. So that's one example of how a city went through another path. Then I can also mention London, because London undertook an approach kind of mixed between demand-driven and planning-oriented, mostly for the normal or alternating current chargers. Their deployment was left to the local authorities. So similar to what happened in Brussels, if I understood correctly what Simon explained. And it was a mix because the city did this planning exercise, and they were in direct contact with the electricity utility, with other underground utilities, but they also asked for EV drivers' inputs or just general citizen inputs to help them locate the ideal location for charging infrastructure.
What I found really interesting in the example of Stockholm was the way they worked with the private actors and with the private businesses. Simon, in the example of Brussels, did you also have you also been in contact with the private actors in Brussels, or is everything rather government-based and research-based in our lovely city?
Well, so it's mainly planning based. So indeed, the government decides on the locations, and then there is a concession to which private parties can engage to, and then they can make an offer to get sort of the right to place charging stations at those locations. Now, we do work with those private players because we also, for instance, all the data on their charging stations is also being shared and is also being used for research. So there is definitely a good collaboration on that aspect.
Amazing. Thank you very much for this exciting conversation where we saw how many approaches cities can take and that there's no approach that fits all. Let's move to our second topic of today's podcast, which is the issue of limited public space. A huge proportion of public and street space is currently occupied by private vehicles, either as a road space or for parking. And the current trend for mobility in urban policies is to change that. We often hear about reallocation of public space from cars to people, public transport, active modes of mobility, you name it. However, this is a little bit of a double-edged sword for development of charging infrastructure, isn't it? Now, let's talk a bit about the ways how to balance the scarcity of public space and the need to facilitate the transition to electric vehicles via the provision of public charging. And I would like to ask Marie, if you have seen in your research work some strategies that could minimize the space occupied by charging stations and parking spaces on public roads, if you know about some other options there are for urban planners, and how can they promote development of charging infrastructure in other areas than just public space?
Yeah, that's a great question. Indeed, usually the cheapest and most convenient way of recharging an electric vehicle is privately, be it at home or at the workplace. And cities can help with that. And I would like to mention three roles cities can take to promote the development of private charging infrastructure, or also semi-publicly accessible. And those three roles are through regulations, through incentives, and by gathering all the different stakeholders, so through the creation of coalition. About the first role, so regulation. Often cities have authority over building codes. And I will get back to this, but first we have to understand that more and more EV owners, especially in cities, will live in apartment buildings or multi-family housing in the coming years. And some of those buildings are being built right now. And it's very important that they're future-proofed for EVs, meaning that there is enough power available and that electricity is arriving in the parkings and on the different parking spaces, or at least that trenching is being done. So all of the heavy construction is being done so that when an owner wants to install an EV charger on their parking spot, this can easily be done, because otherwise retrofitting the building so that it's ready to accept electric vehicles can be very expensive. The second one, so incentives. For this one, I will mention two different programs. The first one is in the Netherlands. In the Netherlands, the government realized that building managers do not necessarily have all the knowledge around charging infrastructure. It's often outside of their wheelhouse. And so to help building managers come up with EV-ready plans, the government decided to subsidize consultant reports. So basically, they pay for parts of the hour that the consultant will dedicate to helping the building manager establish a step-by-step plan to make their building EV-ready. And this program has been fairly successful so far. And other incentive programs that I would really like to mention is in Germany, in Baden-Württemberg. It's called the eQuartier Hub, and that addresses very well the challenge that you have identified of a lot of pressure on public space. And so this eQuartier Hub incentive is for charging infrastructure that is put underground in underground parking lots. And the specificity is that this funding is made available if and only if, when you install EV chargers underground, you remove a parking spot from an on-street parking spot, and this vacant space is made available for cyclists or pedestrians or just recreational area. That's a good example of how to increase the number of chargers in a city while decreasing the pressure on the public space. The third role that I mentioned is about gathering all the different stakeholders and facilitating exchange. And Eva already mentioned this role from the city's perspective. And I think this is a very important one, because cities have contact in all the different city agencies, have ways to reach the public. They can be in contact with energy networks, with charge point operators, with businesses. So there are many ways in which they can help ease the process, is the discussion between the different partners, and identify synergies and ways everyone can work together to efficiently deploy chargers.
If I would go quickly back to the first point you mentioned, basically ensuring that the new buildings which are being constructed are future-proofed for welcoming EV drivers and to having enough charging capacity, how does this connect with the grid capacity which is available to these buildings? Would you recommend also with each building permit basically having like a grid upgrade to be able to accommodate these new EV drivers and their new chargers?
And indeed, the grid aspect is very important for the EV transition. And the more in advance you can contact the electricity utility, the better it is. So when you apply for a permit, indeed, there has to be discussions with the local electricity utility to tell them that in a certain number of years, you will have this building built. And then depending on the number of parking spots that you have and depending on different aspects, then you could estimate how much power you will need, and then discuss this with the electricity utility.
And I think you also have to remember that there are different techniques now how you can balance the load so that you don't have to have everybody charging at the same time. We know that in Stockholm or in Sweden, a car travels about 40 kilometers per day in average. So usually with normal charging, you have got to what you need in 2 hours. So you don't have to have charge at the same time, all of you. So if you spread out the charging during the night or and so on, you can actually charge a lot of cars when you now have the system for balancing the loads and so on. So you have to take that into account too, so you don't over estimate the need.
I do agree. Yes, indeed. Like smart charging, it's very important to implement smart charging solutions. And especially for new buildings, definitely, and also for existing buildings. Indeed, instead of retrofitting the existing buildings to increase the power capacity, as Eva mentioned, there are a lot of solutions that exist to basically flatten the load all across the day And the electricity utility also have a role here. Maybe they could provide to the building manager an estimate of the power capacity all across the day so that building managers can see how many EV chargers they can add without upgrading the grid. And usually there is some spare capacity. For example, at night, if you're not running any electricity, any electrical device, or also during the day, there is spare capacity. So yeah, thank you, Eva, for mentioning that. There is definitely a lot of ways to avoid costly grid upgrades.
So these are basically the ways how the city can get involved in development of charging infrastructure in private areas. Is there a way how to get involved also in the semi-private areas, such as supermarkets or, Eva previously mentioned, fast food restaurants? Is there a way how to incentivize the businesses to come on board with the city and provide the semi-private charging points?
I would say that, as I mentioned, regulation can also be an option. So, for example, at the European Union level, right now there is an energy performance building directive that is underway, and that could regulate semi-public areas. So parking lots that have more than a certain number of parking spots could be required to install at least one charger or to be EV ready, meaning that you can easily install chargers later on. So regulation is also an option. Incentives, of course. Cities can provide incentives for charging infrastructure, and that will boost the deployment of semi-public chargers. A last way could maybe, for example, as we mentioned, to facilitate exchange. So the cities could create a platform to identify easily partnerships between private landowners that have space and are willing to install chargers on their properties, and maybe charge point operators that have the business intention to install chargers, so they can facilitate the discussion between them, and maybe through the creation of an online platform so that they can both connect.
Eva, you already mentioned you in Stockholm did incentivize in some way the private and semi-private charging. Which approach did you choose, and how did the implementation of this approach go?
Well, when it comes to home charging in Stockholm, we have 10% live in a single family house, so they can do whatever they want there. And we have information campaigns towards them where we tell them, you know, step by step how you can do it and what to do. And we also have seminars in the evenings where you can come and get this type of information, which is also available online, of course. And then also you can meet with different companies selling the equipment. And we do the same for multifamily housing. The city of Stockholm is believed to be a neutral source of information so that we can give them this type of information and advice, and also like seminars and exhibitions and so on that we do. And that's proved very beneficial. There's a lot of people that have turned to us, and we can also see, because there's state funding available for them to acquire, and so we have also that, of course, included in our information campaigns. And we can see that there is a lot of single family housing and also a lot of multifamily houses that have applied for that type of state funds. So that has been a good way to make sure that there's a lot of also home charging alongside with this. And we've also had different kind of similar informations towards large landlords and so on that own large estates. We also, the city of Stockholm also is a landlord. I mean, we do have a lot of public housing, and we also have a lot of office buildings and so on that we rent out. So we mapped this, and we found out a few years ago that we have 50,000 parking places that are off streets within the facilities that we own, and we need to make sure that they are charging there as well. Most of them are not public. Some of them are semi-public, but most of them are like private. Somebody is renting this place because they live in our house, or they rent, or they have an office in our house, and a building that the city of Stockholm owns. So now we also have like guidelines for how to make sure that they are equipped with charging. And we have like a network of people that are working to facilitate this. And the politicians have been very strict and said that they need to be up to 80% equipped with charging by 2030. So we have a lot of charging going on there as well.
If we stay in the public space of Stockholm for a bit longer, there's one other thing apart from scarcity that we hear a lot in connection with public space, and that is the aesthetical value of it. So the modern charging infrastructure can be seen as visually disturbing, especially in these historical cities. So how did you deal with this in Stockholm? Did you manage to avoid creating visual smog?
Yeah, we have some guy. You have to follow our rules, so to say. So they need to follow the color scheme of the city. So there's two different colors to choose from. And there's also a requirement of the maximum height. They cannot be higher than 1.40 meters high. And they need to, it can have a logotype, and it can say the name of the company who is running the charging pole, because if something is wrong, you should contact them and not the city of Stockholm, but it shouldn't have any advertisements on them or anything like that. So it needs to be this Stockholm green or gray color that we have, so that it blends in with the other things that we have on street and so on. And also, they cannot have any loose cords. If there's a cord there, it has to be like rolled in or something. Or we think that also that the EV driver brings the cord, so that we don't have loose cords hanging around if somebody is not there. Except for the fast charging, of course, because, you know, you don't bring your cord to a fast charging station, then it's fixed to there. So we have some things like that in order to make it blend in and look more like it's part of the street's furniture, so to say.
Can you think of maybe a specific example of a place in Stockholm where this worked just perfectly and all the factors clicked in just the right way? You know, the infrastructure did blend in with the urban fabric and it didn't obstruct other modes of transport, and maybe it even had a positive impact on EV adoption and urban mobility in general. Is there such a shining example in Stockholm?
No, but I mean, I think they work well and that they blend in. We've had one, because we don't say exactly how it's supposed to look. So we've had a few issues in the beginning where there were lights on them and they lit up, and they do it. And now we've reduced that. So they should not have too much light on them, because that makes them more, eye-catching, so to say, and maybe so. But it's, I mean, you want people to find them, but you don't want them to stand out. So that's some of dilemma. But it's more like, how do we promote electric vehicles in the right way? Because actually, our goal in Stockholm is also to reduce passenger cars. We should reduce passenger cars by 30% by 2030. And we want to promote walking, biking, and public transport. So it's not that we want to do exactly the same that we have done and just exchange the internal combustion engine to an electric engine. We do want to reduce traffic as well. So that's also important too, that we work with car sharing, carpooling, walking, cycling. We are expanding the public transport network and so on as well. So we can't forget those things. We need to do that as well. And so I think we are also reducing parking places in Stockholm, and we know somewhere where they should be reduced and so on. So that's not where we are putting up the charging either. So we're trying to do it in as good as possible way. But, you know, that's also the conflict, that there is this, how can we promote EVs when we should not have so much cars? So that's also a path we need to walk.
So I see that it's a really balancing exercise of juggling all the different interests and all the different things to take into account when it comes to public space and when it comes to the way it's used and how electric charging infrastructure fits within all that. So this can be, as Eva mentioned, really tricky. Simon, do you have any idea if it's possible from the research perspective to help cities in that? Do we have tools that we can provide to city planners to support them in juggling all these aspects?
Yes, of course. I mean, indeed, it is. There are many dimensions to be taken into account, as Eva and Marie clearly mentioned. There are some tools, however, available for cities to be used, user-friendly and customizable. Such tools are already being built. Some are already available. One example I would like to highlight is a tool that was made in the European project eCharge for Drivers. It's a project where we've also, as a research institution, contributed to with our scientific research. And actually, this tool, it was developed for 3 cities in Europe and is currently in a testing phase to be launched publicly soon. And the tool allows policymakers to actually upload a range of input data about their city. So it's really configurable to the specific case of a city. So these can be socio-demographic data, but also the locations of existing charging stations and even charging transactions on those stations. And then such models, for instance, this model of the eCharge for Driver project, it will use all these inputs into a calculation and sort of calculate a multi-year rollout plan that includes how many charging stations should be installed, but also where they should be installed. And so such tools can be a useful starting point for cities, sort of as to develop their multi-year rollout plans, I think.
A similar tool has been developed within the UserChi project as well. The Click online decision support tool helps local authorities to decide where to install new charging infrastructure, independence on criteria such as network coverage and available charging technologies, but also existing road network, current charging infrastructure, the state of electric grid, or any other relevant data that local authorities may have at their disposal. They can even take into consideration data pointing to the proximity of leisure facilities, services, supermarkets, etc. Once all this information is uploaded into Click, the platform uses this data to estimate how many charging stations should be added in different areas and how much charging capacity is needed. Eva, in Stockholm, have you used any decision support tool when you were first rolling out your electromobility plan, or have you started from Greenland?
No, we read a lot and we looked into all types of different things to do but we started very early. I mean, the first charging on street charging street or whatever was put up in 2014. And then also we sent out surveys to EV drivers. We had meetings with different stakeholders. So we tried in various ways to see, you know, what would be the best way. But also there was very little data available at that time. So I would say that we just thought that we're going to do the best, but we're also going to learn as we do. So we did a lot of things and we have kind of adjusted our access right agreements and the regulations that we put up as along as we go. And I think we are still learning. There's still not a one way to do it because it's also different in what types of charging that you're putting up. And I would say it's probably different in different cities and different in different contexts. So you need to still, I think, learn and be very open for adjustments and things like that. But I think the most important thing is just to do it. Because if you're going to, you know, wait for this super one single solution to come, it's not going to come. Because, you know, you just need to do it and learn and go. Because if you're just waiting, you're going to be waiting forever, I think.
So I see that for pioneers like Stockholm, it was mostly an iterative process of learning by doing. Do you think it is easier now for cities that can draw from the experience more developed cities in electric mobility are having, and the amount of data that is out there is way higher than it was in 2014, I'm pretty sure.
I do think that now there is more data available, and as Simo mentioned, data is the key to properly locate charging infrastructure. And I would like also to echo Eva. It's great. The planning exercise is great, but we also have to do it and plan, and then that's how you learn. But I would say that now, yes, there are more and more tools to help locate charging infrastructure, to know what type, of chargers should be deployed where, and to also tailor that to the specific needs of the city. And for example, at ICCT, we also developed an in-house modeling tool. It's called EV Charge to forecast the amount and type of chargers to be deployed at different time horizons. And it can be tailored to the specific needs. So it can assess the amount the charging infrastructure needs for, let's say, just a city district, but also for an entire country.
Yes, I would also like to add on that. I agree that these tools can be very useful to actually start installing charging stations, make an initial planning. And once there is an existing network up and running, you have always new data that is being generated by the EV population. And I think monitoring that data is really very crucial and can really help you to more accurately adjust your deployment plan over time.
Great. Thank you all so much for being here with me.
From the importance of a coherent plan to public-private partnerships, this episode delves into the factors that cities consider when deciding where to install new charging stations. We also talked about the importance of user-centric planning to ensure that charging is not only widely available, but also user-friendly and equitable. In our next episode, we'll ask an even more burning question: how sustainable is electromobility? See you next time! This podcast is produced by Eurocities with UserChi, an EU-funded project that supports the development of electromobility in Europe. It does so by designing and testing user-friendly charging solutions in 7 European cities.
Today's episode was written and produced by Marion Piniel
and hosted by Katarzyna Kirova.
It's voiced by Daniela Beretta.